Chapter 21. Sal caught Clyde at the front door of the Brooks estate and stopped him from leaving.
"Wait," he said. "Don't just run out the front door like a maniac."
Mr. Haniger, standing nearby, rose to help with the door, but stopped when he saw Sal's face. He leveled his gaze at Sal and asked, "Is there a problem?" Sal kept his hand on Clyde's shoulder and said,
"Yes, we may have an incoming threat."
Without another word, Mr. Haniger strode efficiently to the far closet. He opened it, stepped inside, and soon disappeared into the darkness. Clyde tried to leave out the front door again, but Sal held tight to his shoulder.
"We'll go, but not that way. Come on, there's more than one way out of here."
Clyde nodded.
"Okay, lead the way."
Mr. Haniger emerged from the closet with three hard cases. He strode to the table in the foyer and put each one down. He flicked the latches, and each case sprang open, revealing gleaming Tommy submachine guns. Clyde's mouth dropped open as Mr. Haniger smoothly checked the action and inserted a drum magazine. He handed it to Clyde.
"I trust you know how to use one of these."
It wasn't the version the Army used. These had four grips and other slight differences. Clyde took it and simply nodded, unable to speak. He wouldn't have been more surprised if Haniger had pulled a trombone out of his ass. Sal took the proffered weapon and checked the bolt. Satisfied, he stepped to the window and, keeping most of his body behind the brick, peeled back the curtain and peeked outside.
"I don't see anything obvious, but they might be waiting for a better opportunity."
Clyde felt he should pinch himself. This must be a dream, or perhaps a nightmare would be more accurate. "You guys expecting an invasion?" he asked, hefting the submachine gun. Sal said,
"We like to be ready."
Victor strode from the study. He held a sawed-off 12-gauge pump-action shotgun.
"I just spoke with Abigail on the telephone. She's fine, but alarmed. I told her to go to a neighbor's and expect to be picked up soon."
Clyde cursed under his breath. His parents didn't have a telephone. He wasn't used to the technology, even though Abby had insisted on the extra expense. He should have thought of calling her immediately.
"We need to get to her right away. Those guys will tear the place apart until they find her."
Victor squinted, pulling his brows together into a bushy mess.
"What do you know about it? Have you dealt with Trambolini before?"
Clyde gave him a blank stare, not believing his father-in-law could be so flippant under such dire circumstances. Didn't he care about his own daughter's safety? Victor fed six shells into the shotgun and said,
"He won't go after her. It's against his code."
Clyde raised his voice.
"You'd bet her life on it? I won't. Hell no. I'm going to her with or without your help."
Victor chided.
"On foot? No, I'll take the rolls."
"Too conspicuous," Sal said. "We'll take the Ford."
Victor's scowl deepened.
"You'll do what I tell you, Mr. Sarducci."
Clyde thought Sal might tear Victor limb from limb, but instead he took a deep breath and got control of his emotions before saying,
"Mr. Haniger will stay here. I'll go with Clyde and make sure Abby's safe."
Victor approached the window and Sal hissed,
"Stay away from the windows. Once we're gone, you should go to the basement."
Victor shook his head.
"I won't hide in my own house. If Vinny wants to come, let him come. But I think we're overreacting."
Sal's jaw rippled as he gritted his teeth. He said,
"At least wake Mrs. Brooks and tell her what's happening, Victor."
"I won't. No reason to get her riled up. This is probably nothing."
Clyde felt his patience slipping. He wanted to get to the apartment right now.
"You two work this crap out later. Show me to the Ford, or I'll run straight out the front door and take the damn rolls."
Sal raised his chin toward Mr. Brooks. Victor sighed and gave him a slight nod. Sal said,
"Okay. Let's get to the garage. Keep your weapon on safe until you need it."
Sal walked toward the back of the house, his long strides eating up large distances quickly. Clyde nearly screamed, but kept it inside. He didn't need a lesson on weapon safety. He swallowed his pride and hustled to keep up with him. Haniger followed a few yards back, and when they got to his side door, they all stopped and waited. Haniger peeked through the small window that looked out onto a large attached garage. Clyde could see two cars, one beneath a shroud, the other a large Ford wagon. Clyde wanted to burst into the garage and get going, but Hanniger took his time, making sure no one waited to ambush them. Hanniger finally looked back at Sal and gave him a nod. Hanniger opened the door and stepped through, sweeping the submachine gun through the space like an expert. Clyde wondered about that, but impatiently followed him, keeping his weapon at port arms and his finger on the trigger guard. Sal pointed at the Ford.
Get in the back and roll the windows down on both sides.
Clyde wanted to tell him to hurry the hell up, but figured it would be counterproductive, so he nodded and slid into the back seat. The inside of the car smelled like musky leather and oil. He rolled the back windows down and poked his head out. Sal crouched at the driver's side door, and Hanniger stood at the side of the garage door. They both kept their weapons leveled. Hanniger gave the door a mighty push upward. After the quiet of the dreary night, the sound of the door winding up smoothly seemed to be louder than artillery fire. When the world didn't explode in gunfire, Sal stepped into the car, placed the submachine gun on the seat beside him, and started the engine. Clyde noticed the driveway sloped upward, keeping the garage door hidden unless you knew where to look. Sal didn't wait for the engine to warm before he eased his way out of the opening. Once the trunk passed the door, he stopped and waited until Hanniger shut it behind them again. Clyde saw Sal looking through the rearview mirror at him. He hadn't noticed how gray Sal's eyes were until that moment. He seemed to be enjoying himself.
Be ready. If they're out there, they'll attack us as we come out, he said gruffly.
Clyde felt his stomach lurch at the thought. He didn't really consider Trambolini and his gang to be a genuine threat to him and the heavily armed Brooks clan, but now he felt exposed. What if they were out there? They'd riddle the car like the cops had done to Bonnie and Clyde. He'd seen the pictures. They'd use Thompsons just like this one, or at least that's the way he'd heard it. He could hardly speak against a suddenly dry mouth, but he said,
I'm ready.
After she hung up the phone with her father, Abby's head spun with fear and confusion. Why had Clyde gone to her father without telling her? They'd agreed to go there together. Anger built in her gut. What else wasn't he telling her? She thought about her father's warning. Surely the Trambolinis wouldn't attack her. How would they find her? Few people even knew where she lived. Her father had told her to go to a neighbor's and wait until someone got there to pick her up. Ridiculous. It was nearly midnight. Her breath caught in her throat as she thought about Trish. She didn't know about the looming threat. If the Trambolinis wanted payback, they'd go after Charlie and Trish. The low-hanging fruit. The expendables. She grabbed her heavy coat and an umbrella. She checked the clock and noted that she'd be going out past curfew. If stopped, she'd simply explain that she worked nights. They had never stopped her before, but as the general population eased into the reality of World War, the local police had stepped up their patrols. She wished Trish had a phone, but she couldn't afford one. Abby hadn't spoken with her since the incident over a week before. Clyde had forbidden any more contact, as had Sal, and she planned to honor that, but not now that her friend's life might be in danger. She had to warn her. She owed her that, at least. She stood at the door and peeked through the peephole. Nothing out there but the shabby hallway illuminated by a single light on the wall. She thought about Clyde. He must be crazy with worry. What will he do when he finds me gone? He'll go to Mrs. Lambert's, where I'm supposed to be going. She contemplated leaving a note here, but what if the threat was real? The Trambolinis would love to find the note. She left the apartment and went the three doors down to Mrs. Lambert's. She'd probably be fast asleep at this late hour, but she had no other choice. She rapped on the door a few times. When nothing happened, she did so again, louder this time. She heard scuffling feet on the other side of the heavy door, then the raspy, sleepy voice of Mrs. Lambert.
Who in God's name is knocking at my door at 11:30 at night?
Abby straightened up so she could see her through the peephole.
It's me, Abby Cooper. I'm dreadfully sorry, Mrs. Lambert, but it's an emergency.
Three latches unlocked, and Mrs. Lambert opened the door cautiously.
Abby, whatever is the matter?
I'm so sorry to wake you, but there's some trouble. I can't explain any of it right now, but if Clyde or my father or even a big man named Sal comes asking about me, please tell them I went to warn Trish. If anyone else does, tell them nothing, okay?
What is going on? Are you in trouble? We'll call the police.
No, no police. It's probably nothing.
I'll likely be back before Clyde even comes looking, but in case he does, I want him to know where I have gone. Has he hurt you? If he's laid a hand on you, I'll... No, it's nothing like that. Please, just do what I've asked. I'll owe you a cake.
Mrs. Lambert gave her a distasteful look and said,
No, thank you, dearie. The one you made for the church fundraiser. Well, no thank you.
Abby turned away and waved back at her.
Thank you, Mrs. Lambert. I'll check in once I'm back.
She heard her say something else, but she didn't catch it. She took the stairs two steps at a time. She stopped in the small lobby. She checked outside. It looked cold, wet, and dreary, but she didn't see anyone waiting to shoot her or thump her on the head. Would I see them? She wondered. Not if they're good at their jobs, she decided. She swallowed her fear and exited the apartment building. She looked both ways, then put up the umbrella and tried to keep her pace reasonable. She didn't want to attract unwanted attention from the cops or the Trambolini clan. She wondered once again how in the world she'd gotten herself into such a mess. Why did she always take the odd fork in the road? If she'd just ignored her curiosity at the grocery store those weeks ago and taken a normal job in a factory or perhaps done more volunteer work, she could have been happily in bed with her husband right now instead of out here in this god-awful weather while men with ill intent hunted her. She glanced behind her. She saw no one on the street, but the fear in her gut rose a few levels. She focused all her senses on the surrounding streets and alleys. She had a feeling that someone watched her. Someone stealthy and dangerous. Get control of yourself, she scolded silently. It's just your imagination. She passed a recruitment sign, and Uncle Sam's face looked angry, as though scolding her for being out past curfew. What had she done for the war effort? Absolutely nothing, she thought guiltily. The vision of the two men bleeding out on the floor of the grocery store suddenly assaulted her. She couldn't seem to shake the scene. It popped into her subconscious all the time. Is that what war looks like? Blood and destroyed bodies? She hoped Clyde would never have to see anything like that, but she knew he'd be going into combat despite him continuing to give her lip service that his unit would just be for show. He'd see plenty of death. She shuddered, hoping he'd never be one of the broken ones. She scolded herself for letting her mind wander. She approached the grocery store. She slowed and observed. Nothing looked out of place. She felt guilty being back here, like the whole thing had been her fault. She'd promised Clyde she wouldn't come back here, yet here she was. She walked past the front of the store and looked through the front windows. At this hour, the only light inside came from a small nightlight in the corner near the back. She wondered how Charlie's recovery came along. He'd been hit hard, just like Vince. Neither of them deserved such harsh treatment. How had she escaped injury? She kept her pace steady but felt fear growing in her belly as she approached the corner of the alley. Could she simply walk past it as though nothing had happened there? She glanced behind her. Still nothing, but the feeling of being followed stuck in her gut, right alongside the fear. She forced herself to keep walking, although she felt like running. She stepped off the curb, and the darkness of the alley on her left side felt as though it tried to draw her in, like some black whirlpool. She chanced to look and saw three cats beneath the far dim light. All three of them stopped whatever they'd been doing and watched her walk by. She shivered involuntarily and told herself it was from the cold, not the feline stares. She couldn't help increasing her speed a little. When she stepped onto the sidewalk again and left the alleyway behind, relief flooded her. She shook her head, scolding herself for letting her imagination get the best of her. Just a few more blocks, and she'd be at Trisha's shabby apartment. Would she let her in? She must be angry at her for simply cutting her off. Would she be home? Perhaps the Trambolinis had already gotten to her. The thought made her increase her speed, and her fear went up a notch. The rain had stopped for the moment, so she shook the umbrella and folded it up as she walked. She glanced behind her again and caught movement this time. Someone had just darted into the grocery store alleyway. Her heart leaped into her throat and she felt a pang of nausea. She spun and increased her speed. Who would be out here this time of night, and why did they hustle into the alley? There was only one explanation. The threat from the Trambolinis was real, and she was completely alone and horribly exposed. She kept walking, but quickened her pace even more. It made little sense to pretend any longer, she supposed, but if she started running, she felt she'd lose all control. She glanced behind her again, and this time the person wasn't trying to hide. They trotted along the sidewalk, catching up to her quickly.
Shit!
Time to run. She clutched the umbrella and took off. She wore flats and hoped they'd stay on her feet. She heard the footsteps growing closer. She darted into the next dark alleyway and pushed her back against the wall. She brought up the only weapon she had, the umbrella. She wondered if she should try to jab the person with the pointy end or simply use it as an inadequate bludgeon. She couldn't stomach stabbing someone, so she gripped it like a baseball bat. The footsteps grew louder, and she tensed every muscle in her body. She held the umbrella tightly. The person suddenly appeared, and Abby swung with all her might. The umbrella broke on the person's arm, and she heard them cry out in pain and surprise.
Ow! Crap!
Abby darted deeper into the alleyway, hoping to find an exit. The person yelled, "Stop! Damn it, it's me!" Abby recognized the voice. She stopped running and turned back to the street. She saw Trish walking toward her, clutching her arm.
"Trish? Is that you?" "Course it's me! Who else, you crazy she-devil?"
Abby went to her and couldn't help hugging her short friend.
"Oh, Trish, I'm so happy to see you."
"Could have fooled me," Trish mumbled.
"I was coming to warn you. I thought you were one of them."
"One of who?" she asked as she continued rubbing her arm. "The Trambolinis," she blurted.
"My father thinks they're coming for us. I came to warn you."
"Nah, Miles told me not to worry about them. Told me they're business associates of your father and some others who were at the club that night. He said they would sweep it under the rug." Abby heard the way Trish said Miles's name and wondered about it, but now wasn't the time. She explained,
"But that was before he found out who Sal killed. One of them was a Trambolini, a nephew of their boss. My father thinks he'll come for revenge."
"A nephew?
Oh, shit. I came to warn you. You need to come with me back to the apartment. Clyde is on his way to pick me up. He's probably already there by now. Come on."
She clutched Trish's arm and she yelped in pain.
"Ouch! Knock it off! Does Charlie know? They'll come for him for sure."
Abby kept tugging and pulling, and finally Trish followed her back to the edge of the alley. They stopped, keeping in the shadows, and Abby answered,
"I don't think he knows either. Do you know where he lives? We could warn him."
Before Trish could answer, a man dressed in a trench coat and a fedora pulled low, stepped into the alley. He worked the pump action of his shotgun, and the sound and surprise almost made Abby vomit with fear.
"No one's going nowhere," he said.